Welcome to the Brad and Body Podcast. You already know who we are. We wouldn't be here, so let's not waste any more time. Here's Bradley.
Happy Olympics, everyone, and welcome to the Brad and Body Podcast for yet another beauty. Body, how are you, mate?
I'm fantastic. Loving the Olympics. I've really enjoyed the swimming. Loving the athletics. Love Jessica Fox. I'm just having the best time. Concerned about the opals, but that's going to be, we're going to work all of that out with our guests. So please, Bradley, feel free to introduce her.
Well, yes, it's not looking as doom and gloom as it did for when the Opals lost in that heart-wrenching second game the other day. But let's talk about it. This one I have been looking forward to, and she is an absolute beauty. Born in Murrayvale, Victoria, she played for the Adelaide Lightning, playing all 304 games in the National Basketball League, a two-time WNBL MVP, a five-time WNBA All-Star, sorry, seven-time, let's count them up, a five-time NBL champion and a two-time WNBL Grand Final champion, three world championships winning one bronze, three Olympics winning one bronze and two silver. She was awarded the Medal of Order of Australia. She was also Australian Sports Medal in 2000 and the Centennial Medal in 2001. She is the only player ever to have their singlet retired by the Adelaide Lightning. And also, ironically, her original team, the Adelaide Bearcats, retired it as well. She is an absolute legend of our sport, and we love having her on here. And of course, I'm talking to none other than the great Rachel Sporn. Rachel, thank you so much for joining us.
My pleasure, Brad and Body. Thank you. Lovely introduction. Appreciate it. Thank you.
Now, listen, let's fix up all the bits you got wrong because we're going to talk about the Opals because, and we're going to go – we're on today because of the Opals being on tonight, which is unusual for us to get out that quickly, but the situation is quite dire. But before we do that, we want to maybe introduce you to those listeners that may – not know who you are, Rachel. So when it all started in Murrayville, which is a very, very small town in country Victoria, how is it that you found basketball? Because I would have thought in a lot of the country places, it's all about footy and netball. So how is it that you came to basketball?
You're right. The country towns, it is all about footy and netball, which so netball I actually started playing first because I was seven. And there was no junior grades for basketball, so I had to wait till I was a little bit older. But I guess very grateful that an Ogun school teacher, which is another town in the Mallee, an hour away, came to Murrayville and basically taught some, I guess, a group of people who love sport how to play this amazing new game called basketball. So that was in the year I was born, in 1968. And Mum was a wonderful sports person herself, so thankfully she was one of those people that wanted to play this game. And so by the age of nine, I was playing with adults in B grade and not getting much court time. I was, you know, shortest player. And by the age of 12, I'd had a growth spurt. So then playing A grade alongside Mum, which was pretty amazing.
Yeah.
And we then went on to win five premierships together. But it was very basic form of basketball compared to what I was going to find out, you know, in the city in the coming years. You know, we just played zone. We didn't have any offences, never played man-to-man. You'd walk the ball up the floor, and I did that, which is a worry in itself.
I've seen you dribble.
Yes, and yes, you pretty much just cut the key. And I guess, and then what was great is that afterwards the men would, you know, train, and we'd often train with the men as well because sometimes you didn't have enough players there to play five on five. So that was a good thing for me because then that was a bit more physicality and get me ready for city basketball.
So how did you get discovered, like from Murrayville in country Victoria, to be discovered and, you know, have such a fantastic career and really be identified, I think, pretty much nationwide as a South Australian? But how did that all come about?
Yeah, I was very lucky that we played an association game in Bordertown, and I'm sure the basketball fraternity would know, in South Australia, knows an amazing lady from Mount Gambier, Beth Searle, and she saw me play, and that's when she went back to West Adelaide Basketball Club to you know, Ted Power, Ray Warren, Bob Hunter up, and said, her words were, "There's this tall, skinny girl called Rachel. I'm not sure about her surname, but I know it's a football surname, but you need to recruit her." So basically that was the start.
Right.
Unbelievable. Rachel, you're 6 foot two, which is obviously very tall for the WNBL. Were you always the tallest? Because you hear some people when they were tall, they were shorter. I know you said you had a growth spurt, but did you learn to do the point guard thing until you got tall, or was it always tall?
Sorry, I never learned to do the point guard thing. No.
Overstating a little bit, probably.
I was tall from the start because from the age of when I was three, my brother Kieran, he went on to play football with Essendon, a great sports person himself. He was 4.5, and I passed him when I was three, and he never caught me. So all through school, I was that awkward tall girl, used to drop a hip to try and be shorter. But obviously moving to Adelaide when I was 18, I was so grateful for my height because I didn't have the skill set that I needed to probably progress me as a guard. I was able to use my athleticism and height to help me, I guess, fit into what I needed to. And then I had amazing people around me accelerate those skill sets for me to cope with growing straight into a National League side when I first moved to Adelaide in 1986. And I know Boddy would agree that I was very raw.
you were raw, but we could see, you didn't have to be a genius or a basketball expert to see that you had that raw talent was going to translate into something fantastic right from the get-go, really.
Do you know what I love when I hear about you, Rachel, is, you talk to so many people, oh, I went through the Institute and I did this and I got found out at a state championship and then this coach found me here and then I spent 2 years at the Institute and I did this. Or Collie, you've gone the complete other way and an outright champion. When did you know, I've got a career in this?
Probably wasn't really until I was chosen an Australian team or squad in 1989. So I watched obviously the Seoul Olympics, and because when I first moved to Adelaide, I didn't know any basketballers because we only got ABC TV at home and there wasn't any women's sport on TV. So I grew up idolising Raylene Boyle. That's why I love the Olympics so much. I wanted to be a track and field athlete. I wanted to be a sprinter. So for me, basketball hadn't been my dream. Track and field was, and I competed a little bit in Melbourne and at Olympic Park but obviously realised, I'm not going to be fast enough. And high jump was my other favourite event. It was just something that evolved. And then, by 1989, obviously making the Australian team. And then I was like, wow, this is amazing. And Barcelona was our next goal. But we all know that ended in heartbreak. And I still find that hard to talk about when we didn't qualify. But, I obviously had to work full time back then. But you didn't know any different. And I just, I love the sport so much. And even though my first year in Adelaide was bloody hard, I was homesick. I was having to board. And I just found basketball very, very hard because I had so much to learn. But I thank my 18-year-old self every day that I didn't give it up. Because I loved it so much. And I had wonderful support around me. And I know, Boddy, how much Ted Power, what a role he played, taught me my jump shot. He taught me back to the basket moves because I didn't have any of that, and taught me how to use my left hand. So, and I was such a head turner in defense because I played zone all my life. So, I had to, learn a lot, and it was overwhelming at times. Yeah. But, wouldn't have changed it for the world.
What a fabulous story.
And then you get the Australian program. Like, we have the heartbreak of Barcelona, and then Tom Maher is appointed, and 94 World Championship is in Australia. That must have been a terrific high for us to get to the medal round. I know we didn't medal, but like first time, boom, we're in the medal round, and really we have hardly missed since. So that must have been, you must have felt good knowing that I'm at the beginning of something really exciting for Australian basketball.
Absolutely. And how wonderful was it that the World Championships were in Sydney, in Australia?
Yep.
Because I think that was the absolute tonic that we needed after not qualifying for Barcelona. And for me personally, we had our preliminary round games in Adelaide. So many people travelled down from Murrumbidgee to watch me play in that. So that was extremely special. And, then we went on to, I remember I think we only lost by one to China in the semi-finals. So we could have been playing off a gold, and then we lost to USA by 5 for the bronze. So we sort of felt, right, we have arrived on the international stage. And I think Tom was so good for us back then because he gave us that self-belief. And he kept telling us, you have to believe you're special to, you know, win a gold medal at the Worlds or Olympics. And yeah, instead of thinking when we get on the court against USA that, oh, we're going to be beaten by 20, you know, we knew that we could be competitive. And that was the mindset, I think, that turned the Opals around and the success ever since.
Yep.
I would normally ask some stuff about the WNBL, but it's Olympic week and I've got to ask you some stuff. So what is it like winning a medal? Now, we are talking about the Opals here and we'll come to them and what they've got to do. The Boomer's a good shot. Talk to me what it's like. You've got three medals, Atlanta bronze, Sydney silver, Athens silver. It must just be amazing.
Well, it is. And it's quite ironic because winning bronze is more euphoric than winning a silver at that moment.
Yeah, first one.
Obviously, you want silver, not bronze. But for me in Atlanta, because we didn't qualify for Barcelona, getting to that point and winning Australia's first ever medal from that, the men or women, that was so incredibly special. My husband, Murray, was there. My mum and dad were there. Some friends were in the crowd. And I still remember, you know, the feeling of running onto the court and just embracing all my, it was quite surreal. And it's like, wow, has this really happened? And yeah, so it was one of the, you know, best moments. I made a will when I won my Atlanta bronze medal. That's how much it meant to me. It's like, right, I'm going to have a will as to where this medal is, you know, going to be passed down. It was just my favourite thing in the world.
That's so brilliant.
I didn't have kids at that point. And then obviously winning a silver in the Sydney Olympics, how lucky, you know, was I to be an Olympian at a home Olympics. And Sydney did the most amazing job. And obviously that's when all your family can come because it's so expensive to come overseas to to an Olympics. It costs you, you're looking at, you know, probably 15 grand to get there. Yeah. So then all my family could afford to come to Sydney. So that was so special. I had my sisters and brother there as well as mum and dad. And it was just wonderful. And disappointing gold medal match because we were down by 20 at halftime against USA and we lost by that. So we just felt we'd let ourselves down. And Athens was amazing because I was a mum and I was 36, had to work hard to get back into the team, more of a role player. And I am very much into Olympic history. So for me to play the Olympics at Athens where it all began in 1896 was pretty magical.
Yeah.
And I really, and that was probably our best game ever against USA in that gold medal match. And I really felt the third quarter when we were up that we were going to do it. And it was going to come true and I was going to get the fairy tale and retire with the gold medal. But as you know, momentum can change so quickly and especially against USA and we ended up losing by 11. But a lot of tears at the end of that game because that was my last game of basketball ever. Lost the gold but won the silver. So by the time we'd gone back to the change rooms, put our medal ceremony outfits on in the back, incredibly happy and just couldn't take the smile off my face. And yeah, just, I guess, excited about what was going to be next.
Now, I've got to take you back now because I'm not sure after which Olympics it was because I know I've been through Murrayville and I was startled to get to the outskirts of Murrayville where there's a magnificent big picture of you, a painting of you saying Murrayville, home of racial spawn, the you know, Olympian. I think at that stage it was promoting your 96 Olympics. So the question I want to ask you, I mean, obviously the town is very, very proud of you, but which Olympics was it that afterwards you had to do the motorcade in Murrayville? Because I think that's a great story.
Yeah, it is. That was after Atlanta. So they obviously were so proud of my achievements. It's only a little town of 300 people. So, and they decided to have a things coincided it with their spring fair. And so they had organised a little MG that a local open owned, and they had a ticker tape parade just for me down the main street. And, yeah, so I laugh at that because the main street is very short. So it took about 1 minute to get from point A to point B. But the kids were wrapped because they got half a day off school to come and see this happen. And, it was so amazing because people lined up either side and it was just a wonderful moment. And then they actually built, a three-on-three sort of court, as you would describe it now, in the main street, so that we're part of the Mildura City Council. So they donated all the resources and the wonderful locals actually built the court. And that's still standing to this day, all these years later, 25 years later. So I've got my signature on the on the backboard and then a plaque in the ground. So that was one of the most special days of my life, because obviously my grandparents were still alive then, and so it was just wonderful to celebrate that with the town, and I could see, you know, how they embraced my success. Because I'm sure, you know, if you know someone who's competing in the Olympics, it makes it so much more interesting to watch it and you follow it, you know, you just want to follow it so much. So I was just so proud to be able to do that for Murrumbidgee. And then the amazing town, they did the sign that was just prior to the Sydney Olympics. So, yeah. I'm pretty spoiled back home.
Yeah, but you know what I love about that motorcade story is the fact that the main street is so short that you had to drive up it, and then they drove you back it, back down, and then back up a couple of times. So.
it is a pretty gorgeous story, and I was just so grateful for that opportunity. And there's some wonderful photos. I sort of wish that we had, you know, better technology, because I don't know, I've never seen a video of it, only still photos, so I don't even know if anyone did take a video of it. Whereas now, God, you'd have so much footage, you'd be spoiled for choice. But no, something that I'll never forget and hold very dear to my heart.
Okay, let's bring it now to the Opals, because I know a lot of people are sitting, listening to this, thinking, "Oh, what is the scenario? What do we need to do?" Because I felt the performance against Belgium, you know, wasn't all that bad, but then in the end, it did deteriorate, and to lose by 15 was the real problem, because they didn't sort of manage the time and try and keep that margin down. So even then we lost the by two in that heartbreaking circumstance to China. So we're 0-2 with -17 as our point differential, Puerto Rico to come. So can you explain, Rach, what we need to do to finish third in the group and that third place be good enough to get us through to the quarterfinals?
Yeah, I'm like you, buddy, with the Belgium game, because we had played okay, we were one up at three-quarter time, and we were still one up with 7 minutes to go, and we just capitulated in that time. And I had to watch it back, because it was actually a blur to me, even though I was calling it. And I was actually quite shocked when the siren went and we were down by 15. It's like, how did that happen? Yeah. So, yes, now we are -17 because we lost by 15, lost by two. So we are hoping, for example, Canada, a +17. So they lost to Spain yesterday by 10. I was hoping they're going to lose by 20. So for us, because Canada are now +7 and we're -17, we need to beat Puerto Rico by 25 plus to kick Canada out. Right. And then we're hoping that USA, who play France today, smash them. So France currently are +21. So for example, if USA beat France by 20 today, they go to +1. We're -17, so we need to beat Puerto Rico by 18 to kick France out. Right. So they're potentially the France-USA game isn't until, I think, 2:40 today, so we don't know that until later. But our goal at the moment is to, 25 plus to get it done and kick Canada out. So, and it's funny because really you'd like to play Puerto Rico first, like China did, who beat by 42, to get settled and get into a groove. But at least now, because we are playing them last, we know what we need to do and get done.
And can I add here, which is great, I mean, not for Puerto Rico, that is, they lost their first game by 40 and their second game by 30-something. So it's very doable here. We are right within a good chance.
It is. And we played Puerto Rico in the Olympic qualifiers last year, and we didn't, we won 100-74. So that was 24 points. But, you know, you're not playing to win by 50 that then. And we don't want them to score 74, obviously, today. We need to keep them in the 50s. China kept them to 55. Belgium kept them to 52. And then that makes it much more achievable for us to, you know, get our 80 points and get that comfortable margin. And the Opals, they can't panic when they get on the floor. They'll have a goal to win every quarter, and then have a margin that they want to win each quarter by, and anything more than that is a bonus, because you don't want to panic early and get overwhelmed by the situation. So at least they've had these 3 days to get it organised, get it in their mindset, and come into this game confident.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask you, because you've been in that sort of scenario yourself at that 94 World Championship, where in the intra-group play in Adelaide, in the last game, because of a couple of upsets during the course of it, the Opals had to beat Italy by 13 or more. And, I mean, you end up doing it, obviously, because you went on to the medal round. But it's a curiosity to me as to what the mindset might be, because you know, okay, we have to win by, disregarding the USA-France result, that you have to win by 25 to knock out Canada to go through. So does that's got to add an extra pressure, because you think, well, we're capable of beating this team by 30, the other teams have beaten them by 30, we should beat them by 30. So say you're not very clear at quarter time. Say it's close at quarter time and it's still close at half time. The pressure builds like what it's, you know, you said we just got to be a certain amount of points ahead at quarter time, you just build it. Like, it worries me that it can be a little bit overwhelming what you have to achieve.
Yes, I remember how nervous we were before we had to play Italy. Yep. And there was a lot on the line. And, of course, there's so much on the line at the Olympics, but there was a lot on the line in Sydney, because if we didn't advance to the top eight, it was going to be a financial disaster for Basketball Australia, because we were going to be playing, you know, Parramatta from 9th to 16th position and not at the Sydney Entertainment Centre from 1st to 8th. Yep. So there was so much pressure on us. But thank God, I love Michelle Timms. She had a blinder. She had 27 points. And I know that we were up by 12 at halftime. So the pressure sort of waned. Obviously, we had to still play so intense. You really couldn't relax until the final buzzer went. But the high that we were on after winning that match, I'll never forget. And that momentum took us into the next round. You know, we were looking down and out. We won our quarterfinal. We lost our semifinal by one and a bronze medal game by 5 points. So we were back in it and got back into form. So I'm so hoping that this is the journey that the Opals can go on from today as well.
Oh, Rachel, so much insight, and I love listening to you. We haven't even had a chance to talk. I want to talk more NBL and even WNBA with Detroit, but there is so much, and it's that time of the show, and we've got to have you back. You're just phenomenal. It's that time of the show where what we do now is we ask you some names, or we throw some names at you, I'm sorry, and you can have one word, one sentence answer on what they mean, what comes to mind first thing. So I'm going to start it off. And I'm very much looking forward to hearing what you say about these ones. And the first one, Tom Maher.
A magician, because he is with his cards, but also with what he can do on the court. He was, you know, one of the best coach alongside, you know, Jan Stelling, best coach I've ever had.
Wow.
All right, let's stay with coaches. And you mentioned him earlier, had a lot to do with your early development, Ted Powell.
Okay. What was Ted to me? He was in some ways my guardian angel, I think, because he was nurturing, but he was firm, which is what I needed. I give so much credit to Ted for my journey and where I got to. I think without him by my side at the start, you know, that may not have happened so easily. Right. So,
nice touch.
Yeah, my guardian angel.
Nice touch. Next one, you mentioned this one a bit earlier, Michelle Timms.
It's hard to put words to Timsy because she, what is a great word for Michelle Timms? She's heart and soul.
Great
but
answer.
For me, with the Opals, you know, I was very lucky because I had Robin Murray as my captain, who was such an incredible leader and just kept everyone in line. She didn't have to say anything. We kept in line. And then to have Timsy as our leader on the floor and point guard role. So you had Robin as your captain and Timsy as our point guard leader. How lucky was I? And Timsy, she played at a level that she demanded from everyone else. And I think that's a wonderful attribute to have. She would take her with you, and you knew if you weren't reaching that standard, you always wanted to for Timsy. And she just was the best leader by example. You know, she just always gave 110%. And I think that's why she has so many admirers, because she was just gutsy and had no fear.
Yeah, my word for her is just lovable. I love her so much. It amazes me.
He has a serious crush on Michelle Timms. It's unbelievable.
I saw her in 84, all legs flying and just crazy kid, and I thought this girl's going to be great. Okay, I got one for you. She was our nemesis for a long time with China, Chung Hai Shi.
Oh, Okay. She makes me nostalgic because Zung Kai Shi, we're the same age. You know, she's 6'9", I'm 6'2". She weighs 50 more kilos than me. She was my toughest opponent, and I had to work at the highest work rate ever to even be slightly competitive against her. But she was the most beautiful person to play against because we gave her so much attention and manhandled her so much, and never, ever did she retaliate. She was the perfect sportsman and sportsmanship. And I think I have so much respect for Zung, and I have some amazing photos of guarding her, and I think she'll always be my most favourite and toughest opponent ever. She makes me nostalgic because it was hard times, but it was great times.
Former teammate to round this one out, Sandy Brondello.
Well, I have to put straight in best friend, without a doubt. And I think I'm such a great admirer of Sandy because, you know, from where she began in Mackay and the leadership skills that she developed through her journey blow me away. And to now the confident woman that she is when she's coaching, because I know my limits and I'm not a head coach, but Sandy just thrives in it. And, you know, she has learned that it wasn't probably as innate in her as some, but over her journey, she has learned that. And I think, and I know Body would agree, she was one of those trainers that had the best work rate ever. And she puts as much effort into coaching as she did as a player. And that gives you a lot of, you know, confidence because she does. She does so much work. And she has coaches around her, but she will still watch tape, still do help with the scouts because she just wants to not leave any stone unturned. So, yeah, I can't speak highly enough of Sandy.
All right, the last one for you is a former South Australian teammate who's sort of disappeared out of the scene these days, but you were sort of synonymous together, especially during the Adelaide Lightning's successful early years, Michelle Brogan.
Okay, so we all know that Brogues was poetry in motion, so I'm going to go with that again. And I think with Brogues, she was one of those players that had the amazing basketball IQ.
Yeah.
And she just knew where to be on the floor. And she was instrumental, you know, with the Opal success in Atlanta. And, yeah, she's a player that probably doesn't get talked about a lot, but it is up there with the greats. And, you know, you saw that as her teammate and then certainly found that when she moved from Adelaide to Sydney and I became her opponent, and you wish that she was back in our team because she did add so much. So I think the poetry in motion, because she would justify opponents and get through these amazing gaps, and her basketball IQ, for me, Brogues had that in spades.
Brilliant. Yeah. Rach, I just wanted to ask you something before we do wrap this up. Can you tell us, obviously I know you're married, some beautiful kids. Just tell us what you're doing now.
Sure. I'm a clean sport educator for Sport Integrity Australia. So they were a SADA. So I don't watch people do a wee. I'm the chaperone. But I absolutely love this role because I presented to the Hockey Roos a couple of months ago. I presented to the Rugby Sevens. I presented to the Australian Rollers. And now I'm feeling, you know, it's like, wow, I've just done, you know, the anti-doping session with these athletes, and now I'm watching them compete in Tokyo. So for me to be back at the elite level of sport and now presenting to them, to my, I guess they're not my comrades anymore, but you know, I still see them as that. So for me, that's, I just can't get away from sport. I keep getting drawn back into it. And I also work for the Australian Olympic Committee in a program called Olympics Unleashed. So that's when you go out to primary schools and you talk about your Olympic journey with lots of photos and lots of messaging, and that just brings me so much joy because the kids are gorgeous. They're year 4 to 7, so they haven't turned into little arseholes yet. They're not. And my son's in year 9, so I know I'm speaking from experience. But
Brad's fallen off his chair. Brad has fallen off his chair.
I've got a year 8 child. I know exactly what you're saying, and he's one of those.
Yeah. So I love the roles that I have, And I love the flexibility I have with those roles that I can then come over and have the other best job in the world and commentate on my Opals. So life is good.
Yeah, it's fantastic. And we appreciate you coming and talking to these two dopes. So so thank you for that. Rachel, you've been, you're just a so humble. That's the best word I can explain. I remember growing up and hearing this name, Rachel Sporn, it was always about this Adelaide person. And, of course, we didn't have internet and TV like we do today. And then to watch you play live when you came to Sydney was like, wow, yeah, that's all that talk. I can get it. You are an outright champion of our sport, even better off the court. And thank you so much for joining us. And we're so looking forward to the next week. And let's hope the Opals can be in a medal home.
Well, thank you, you too. And yes, I'm feeling rather sick right now because I just live and breathe the Opals still and riding this ride with them. And so, yeah, I just so hope that we can get it done today because I want the Opals to advance so the Australian public can see what an amazing team they are and the true grit that we're known for. Thank
Good
you.
Good on you, Rachel.
Fantastic, Grace. Thanks for being on.
Thank you, Rachel.
Thank you. Sorry, I don't know if I'm meant to expand on the one word answer. Sorry.
No, that's all right.
Sorry, that's probably not very steady. Second segment.
It's absolutely brilliant. You have earned the right to say as many words as you like. Don't worry.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you, you too.
We've had some amazing guests on, Boddy, but I felt that was the most humble.
Oh, Rachel's wonderful. She's just a wonderful human being. What you see is what you get.
She makes me think that she didn't feel like she felt she should be there. Do you know what I mean? Like, oh, wasn't that good? And I didn't. Like, mate, you are like a legend of this sport. No, it's like so beautiful, really beautiful.
Yeah, I think with Rachel, like I said, what you see is what you get. You see a beautiful woman and she's a beautiful person.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's always a joy to talk to her, have any interaction with her whatsoever.
Well, I must admit, I haven't had a lot to do with Rachel. Like, you know, obviously wasn't in Sydney and all of those things and didn't really know of her via hearing from you or from others and just how great she was. Well, that as good as what I thought she was, that was 20 times better. That was just so, she was great, absolutely great. And you can see how beautifully spoken she is. Well, no wonder she's, you know, a media and commentator and things like that. All right. Let's stay on the Opals for a sec, okay, because we'll just round this out and everything.
Right.
Do you think the criticism they've copped is fair?
Look, I think what's happened is it's been exposed that they didn't have a plan B, all right? Now, I don't want to talk about the elephant in the room because we all know what it is, but with Liz Cambage's departure, it you know, in that time they had, they don't have much of a plan B. You can see a lot of that was orientated towards, you know, pumping the ball inside and I don't, you know, they had to make running repairs. So yeah. I give them a little bit of a pass, but I was critical of the team selection, of a couple of the selections and the things that I feared have come to pass. Yeah. So I'm really, really hopeful that we get the best out of everybody tonight and going forward, you know, because we have no idea who they would face in the next round. If they go through as we hope, as one of the better third place qualifiers, they're going to play one of the hardest teams possible in the crossover. So it's not going to be easy. It doesn't get any easier from here.
Well, let me just ask you this. Will they play one of the hardest? Because if you look at the men's draw.
Oh, my God, mate. What a fix.
Let's just tell everyone first. Okay, so Australia topped their pool. I'm sure everyone's aware of this, but let's go. Yep. So you've got, and you explained it really well last week, the top two teams of each pool, and there's three pools, right? Top two teams go through, so six teams are in. The additional two teams are the next best third placed, right? So we've done all of that. So the teams that have gone through are Italy, France, Slovenia, Germany, Spain, USA, and, of course, Australia and Argentina, right?
Right.
Now, don't ask me how, Boddy, but the quarterfinals have come out and on one side of the draw is Spain, USA, Australia and Argentina. How did that work?
It works because FIBA's... Okay, that's how it works. How you can have... Well, look, FIBA's it's based in Europe. It's Eurocentric. So they've put four European teams on one side of the draw. So that guarantees you two semifinalists. That guarantees you medalist. It guarantees you a medalist out of Europe, right? So tell me this. How can USA be ranked one, Spain ranked two? Australia ranked 3, Argentina ranked 4. The top 4 ranked teams in the world are on the same half of the draw. Cut it out. You know, that, you know, FIBA said, oh, there were problems with live streaming and whatever, so they couldn't show the actual, you know, how they did the draw. Well, we know how they did the draw, for crying.
You know, the only thing missing when that came on is the friggin' Benny Hill music.
that is going to be adopted as FIBA's official theme to be, like you've to got be played Spain, at all world championships.
You've got these teams just top the pool. I just don't get it, buddy. I just don't get it.
Yeah.
But anyway, look, let's talk about it. We've beaten Argentina once. Stola was amazing. This was back in Las Vegas, obviously, in the preseason. Patty Mills, he's that big dagger 3. Everyone's better. The one thing that worries me, mate, is Baines out. That is a massive loss. He is a body to go against Scola. Yes, I love how Gorge is switching it around and making it right. We've got to play ball. But geez, that's going to be tough.
It is going to be tough, but what I like is that we have now won, and by we, I mean the Boomers, because they're our team. You know, we're bleeding for them. They've won 6 games in a row under Brian's this particular group. You know, they've won the 3, and I think we've gotten much, much better since we beat Argentina. So I think we feel good about ourselves. Now, on the flip side, Argentina's come through as a best third-place qualifier, right? Mm. So they haven't actually improved. They've gone the other direction.
Yeah.
So I like us for this. I mean, obviously, this is out of it, as long as the draw is going to be fixed, randomly made, we're better off if we didn't cop any of the other teams. So Argentina is a favorable draw. So let's be happy with that aspect of it. Okay. And then next step is USA or Spain in a semi-final. So
we'll pick the winners first. So Aussie gets through. Who gets through out of Spain, USA?
I think USA will.
Yeah.
I like the way Slovenia handled Spain yesterday. That was pretty good.
And the next 2 teams, it's not even a contest. Slovenia and France go through there. What a semi-final that'll be. So that means, in theory, Australia will have to play Slovenia or France to get a medal.
And what FIBA would like, USA versus Slovenia. So it's Doncic versus the other, you know, the NBA guys. That's what FIBA's are wanting.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not going to, but, you know, to sort of fix it this way, and it is a fix, it's shocking. It's shocking. Mm-hmm. And we're supposed to be naive in the rest of the world and go, oh, look at that. Look, how did that happen?
How
that happened. You're shonky. You're shonky.
I think the thing for me with the Boomers is it's reliant now on Joe Ingles. That's my opinion, right?
I agree.
Yeah, because I think... And they said it in the commentary as well. Paddy's going to do Paddy. That's it. Paddy is just Paddy. That guy is Superman when he puts that green and gold on, right?
So,
you know, he's going to do. Loving what everyone else. I thought Landale was better. Like, he was real good. Nick Kay, wow. Mr. Reliable. Perfect example. Thibault, love what he's bringing.
Yes.
I thought Nathan Sobey was so much better. He was the Sobey of the NBL the other day.
Yeah.
So I thought that was good. Everyone's, but now to me, they just need that Joe Ingles that to go bang and we're in. That's what I think.
Yeah. You know, I probably could not agree more than that. It's the Ingles factor. He's the X factor. He steps that up just one cog up from where he was. Like when he started the last quarter against whoever they beat in the last game, I've forgotten. I've already wiped them out.
They're gone. Yeah, Germany.
Germany. He was terrific in that last quarter where the players apparently, according to the commentary, the players have spoken to him at 3-quarter time, said, come on, Joe, you get going now. And then he looked for a couple of his shots, made a couple of, I hope he's feeling better about himself in terms of that role. Mm. I know he's trying to be a facilitator, but we need him to be a scorer for us to win a medal. It's as simple as that.
Body, what a week that's been.
Yeah, can't wait.
Thank you. Thank you to, again, Rachel Spawn. That was lovely. Loving the basketball. Of course, we have the Opals tonight at 10 p.m. And they...
That's 9:30 if you live in a civilized state. Go on.
So, as I said, 10 p.m. And and then we've got the Boomers on at 10 p.m. tomorrow as well, 9:30 for Adelaide time before Body can get in and say it. And, and of course, I think that's, 8 o'clock in Perth time. So,
yes.
Two amazing games coming up. Let's hope our both teams can get through, and we're looking forward to it, mate.
All right. See you next week when we're talking about, we've won medals.
Thank you to Burger Boss again, Boddy. We want to thank them, Piranha Media. Wait. Brilliant.
Try the cheese fries.
Love it. All right, have a good week, all. Boddy, Rachel is working for the anti-doping, and she said doesn't have to watch them pee.
Yeah, she doesn't have to watch them. She's outside the door. But, you know, if they're struggling, I think she has to go psh, 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 or turn a tap on.